Well, Dan, when we arrived here at the Capitol this morning and found out some of the news, we didn't realize it was going to be a new state. I mean, a new state, I'm talking about kind of like Vegas.
Well, Las Vegas East, as we continue the talk.
Las Vegas East.
The talk of Connecticut AARP, end of the legislative session broadcast continues. We're joined by State Senator Joe Markley from the 16th District. Senator, good morning. And
good morning to you, gentlemen. A great pleasure to be with you both.
Nice to have you here, too. But I'll tell you something. When Dan and I got here this morning and we started to find out, we had the first stories for our listeners. I couldn't believe some of them.
Well, about the House vote, particularly in regards to East Windsor, the casino, perhaps putting infrastructure in place to bet on live sports events.
Sports betting.
Well,
I mean,
what can you tell us about all of this? Even though it's the House, you're in the Senate, what is your perspective on
well,
this?
Well, I think it's all based in desperation. And it's also based in a refusal to address the real problem. The real problem has been spending. It's not revenue. This is what people have to realize at a certain point. We have a spending problem, not a revenue problem, an addiction to spending that we need to break. And like breaking any addiction, it's going to be a painful thing to say we've got to stop spending money like this. But if we can go through it kind of cold turkey and sweat it out of our system, we'll be all right. All these other proposals, the gambling, legalizing marijuana for revenue, putting tolls back on the road, all these desperate attempts to pick up a few dollars here and there are just putting off the inevitable. We keep raising taxes, and the problem doesn't go away. And again, like an addiction, not only doesn't the problem go away, but by enabling it, the problem just keeps getting worse and worse. And I really feel like this could be the session where we say, okay, we're going to confront the problem. I know I was listening coming into my good friend Len Susio, and I second everything he says about the desperation of our situation, but I'll also second this. I think the Senate Republicans have put a plan forward. It's a tough plan. It's a lot of things in it I'm not comfortable with.
Like?
Well, there's you know, I've always been on the Human Services Committee. I'm very concerned about cuts to the social service spending, the aid we've got to give to the disabled. One of the things we do in this is we try to accelerate the privatization of a lot of state services, to take it away from state employees and give them to the private sector. I wish we didn't have to do that. One reason is because I have nothing against state workers, and I think a lot of them do an extremely good job, just like workers do
everywhere.
But
they think the Republicans do, though. They paint it as a Republican-Democrat issue.
That's what you do. That's what you painting it as a Democrat, Republican. Why can't you get together and come up with a unique idea?
No one's going to pull a rabbit out of the hat. The thing is, the problems are right there to see. And really it is, do we go down the road of more revenue and bigger government, or do we start to get revenue under control and cut the size of government? And that's the basic division in politics between the left and the right, between the Democrats and the Republicans. And the state employees know that the Democrats are more more fans of large government, so they're bound to be better for the state employees if they look at it selfishly and in the short term. One thing I'd say as a Republican is, if we don't solve this problem, we're going to be in a situation like the city of Hartford is, where some kind of receiver comes in and says contracts are null and void, and people are going to get 60 cents on a dollar. We need to fix this and remain solvent as a state. And again, you heard Len say it, we're on the verge of insolvency of a sort. The trouble is, no judge would let us declare bankruptcy. They'd say, look at all that money you've got in Fairfield County. But it's kind of like what the Democrats are saying. Oh, you're still rich. We've still got all these people down in Greenwich with money. Well, check out what's happening. They're leaving every single day. Brad was saying it too about the guys in the big trucks
taking
them out of state.
Five truckers I talked with.
Yeah.
And they were heading for Tennessee and Kentucky.
Hey, and I'll say this, as gloomy as I am and as Len was before when he was talking, one thing about recovery, about health, you feel this yourself. You say, I'm sick as a dog. But a couple of days later, you say, oh, gee, I don't even remember being sick. I was at a state legislative conference last fall, and to talk to people from other states is to remind you that the rest of the country is actually doing very well. And a lot of states that just a few years ago were in our situation, Rhode Island and Massachusetts, states that have the same kinds of problems, a few years of good government and the economy comes back. The health is still there, like a plant that still has it. I think we still got it. We still got all the things that made us great. We've had bad government policies that have laid us low.
Wouldn't we be just better to allow the contracts with the state union, some of which have already expired, let the contract expire on the benefit side, on the health care side, lay off the 4,200 and start from scratch? Wouldn't that be better?
Well, I think that what we've come up with the Senate Republicans with this budget proposal, which demands more than the unions have given so far, but not radically more, might be able to make the solution without the heavy layoffs. And at a certain point, you're laying off people that are doing essential work. It's not like there's, it's not like there's rooms full of people goofing off. But I do agree, something DiCiusio didn't get into when he was speaking particularly is, the biggest problem to me with the contracts is the extension of pushing it down to 2027, 10 more years, and making it impossible for an incoming governor to make fundamental changes in direction. There's almost no trade-off the state employees could give me that would be worth extending the contract that many years into the future.
You know, Dan, as we sit here and we talk with different legislative leaders, you have to wonder why, and you can understand why, that the people of Connecticut know that something's wrong. It's not hard to figure it out. And I just wish that the folks up here would let them know.
Well, and Brad, I want to get back to our guest, Senator Markley, and the CBAC deal. Senator, provided this deal that's been made between the union leadership and the governor actually goes to the rank and file for a vote, if you're a longtime member of the union, why would you vote for it?
Yes, I think it's this is one of the problems with the deal. I think it's going to be rejected by the unions on one side and by the legislature on the other side. It's like you're negotiating for a house and the agent comes back and says $200,000 and the seller says that's not enough, and the buyer says that's too much. You'd say, well, then there's no answer. We can't do that house for that money. A third of the union employees are within 5 years of retirement. So why would they make a deal that cuts their retirement when all they have to do is stay there? And of the remaining ones, the majority of them know that even if you have the 4,200 person layoff, it's not going to reach them. You know exactly where you stand because it's all based on seniority. So I'm very skeptical about the deal going through. I don't like the fact that we can't do anything intelligent. If we're basing it on the deal, we've got to wait till the end of July before we can make a decision, which means the fiscal year will be over, the budget will be out of the hands of the legislature, the governor will basically be running the state without any legislative guidance. This is one of the reasons, again, that in the Republican plan, we say, let's go ahead by statute and take the savings which the union members have agreed to, and let's do some other changes like capping, like eliminating the use of overtime for figuring pensions, which is the sort of thing that most people scratch their head on. How could you say pensions based on overtime? The unions agreed to cap the amount of the overtime that could be used and say you can only use 60% above your normal salary. Who in the world is getting overtime that amounts to 60% above their salary? That shows bad management.
Oh, and by the way, if I'm a union member, then I would just assign myself more overtime.
Well, that's exactly, and this is something that happens. The overtime is based on the last 5 years you work. In some units, let's say there's a suspicion, I would say there's a tradition of loading up the overtime right for those final years. And, you know, I don't blame anyone for anything. This is, everyone's entitled to do what they can to get ahead, to make the best deal they can. It's up to the people that are running it to say, I understand you want it, but we can't afford to let you have it.
I would like to just ask a simple question.
Yes.
How did this kind of stuff that you just explained start in the first place?
Because in good times, there's no pressure on politicians to sharpen the pencil. and the money's flowing, and it's easier just to say, sure, I'll give you this and I'll give you that because you've got plenty of money.
But that's not responsible.
Of course it's not responsible, Brad. And then when the bad time comes, either you've got to go back and say, we can't do it anymore, or you go back to the taxpayers and say, give us one more tax increase. Again, Len was talking about 1991. That was a fork in the road with the income tax.
Oh,
when we had a choice to say, here's a confession, right? I was up here in 1985 and 86 as a legislator. Republican majorities. We had money we didn't know what to do with. So what did we do? We increased spending 1 year 8%, the next year 10%. The Democrats took back over, and the next 2 years they increased spending 14% and 16%. So we went 8, 10, 14, 16. That brings us to 1990, and the next thing you know, we've got an income tax. But what we needed to do in 1990 was to say, we've been spending like madmen.
Absolutely.
And we've got a cut.
You got it. You got it.
Well, you had it, too. We both had it.
The big income tax fight, that's right. But now it brings us to the 21st century, and here's Governor Malloy, largest tax increase in state history, and that was going to solve the problem.
Right.
And even business signed on to it.
That's right.
And then 5 years down the road, that wasn't effective. Let's raise taxes again, second largest tax increase in history. That didn't work, and business got upset by it.
Yes, and the business has been going the whole time. My whole lifetime in this great state, I've watched the decline of the manufacturing industry, which made Connecticut great. And it's finally caught up with us. And it's caught up with Dan Malloy. Malloy now knows that we can't keep going down this road.
It's like the
captain of the Titanic. After you hit the iceberg, you say, wait a second, I think we better slow down. The rest of the Democrats have not caught on to this sufficiently. They're still talking about taxing the rich. Well, you got to tax the rich, you got to be able to impose the taxes in Florida and South Carolina and all the places they're fleeing to. And it's easier for them to leave than it is for us.
You know, it was so strange the other day when we heard, you know, the money's not coming in. The income tax money's not coming in. Well, no. They're going.
That's right.
The wealthy are leaving.
Well, even Commissioner Sullivan admitted yesterday when we did our remote from Effie's that you can't keep raising the income tax rates. He even admitted that.
That's right. There's some Democrats that realize it, but there's fewer and fewer of them. Martin Looney from New Haven is the president of the Senate. I have the deepest respect for him. He's a very hardworking man. He's a sincere man, but he just doesn't get it. He said, I don't understand why the revenues aren't, why the taxes aren't producing what they're supposed to produce. I think he's been here in the legislature, 36 years. If he doesn't see it now, he's never going to see it. And this is one of the things I say about election time. It's not a matter of changing the mind of people who believe that we need to tax more. It's a matter of replacing them. We need people that have a different perspective on it. We can't expect these people who have dedicated their lives to this tax and spend philosophy that they're going to wake up one day and say, for 30 years I've been destroying the state. That's not going to happen.
But, again, I'm glad that we're bringing it to the public.
Oh, you guys, you know, the radio has always been the voice. It's funny, we're talking about my leader, Len Fasano, and he'll say sometimes about the columnists and the newspapers and so forth, you know, they're our megaphone. And I've said to him, it's radio that's our megaphone. That's the way we reach people. The only shame of it is there's now so few local news talk shows like you guys. I mean, again, during the income tax days, there were 20 of them.
Yep.
And now there's very few, but boy, what a job. You're like Paul Revere.
Well, we've got a couple of minutes left. What about a budget? Are we going to get a budget deal, let's say, by the end of this fiscal year, June 30th?
You know, if I were betting right now, I suppose I would bet no. I was hopeful, even until recently, that we might get one by today, by midnight tonight. That's obviously not going to happen. June 30th, the end of the fiscal year, is the next deadline. What scares me is beyond that, there really isn't a deadline. I think, you know, as a practical matter, the next deadline might come in the fall, where if we don't have a deal, the state is simply going to run out of money and going to have to go out in the commercial market and start borrowing money to meet its obligations.
Wow.
And that could be a sufficient wake-up call come, say, October, that people say we've got to do something. But I think what we've got to do is the Republican Senate plan. If you go to people listening, if they're interested, it's ctsenaterepublicans.com. And you can see the plan that Len Susio and I have been talking about this morning. Line-by-line plan lays it out. I don't say it's all pretty, but I am convinced that it would work. And I think that's the document we've got to work off of.
Millstone, today in the Senate, early this morning, you and Senator Susio were the only Republicans who voted against Millstone. How come?
Well, you know, partly because I've had such I've had such a good relationship with AARP. I've worked with them very well, a lot on human services issues, issues affecting the elderly. They've been very strongly against it. And I've heard that side of the argument, and I understand it. It was strange to me that Millstone never made the case to me until the very tail end of the session. And they finally came up with a deal last night. I mean, I saw it. I don't know when we voted on it. 2 a.m. I saw the deal at 1:15 or something. And I looked at it and thought, this is a considerable improvement. But it's no longer possible at that time of night. I can't call anybody up and say, help me understand this. I felt I needed to honor my commitment.
Too late. We're out of time. Senator, thanks so
much.
Go back and get some rest. You need it, and good luck later today.
Great to see you. Keep up the good work, gentlemen.